This is Tsunami Exclusive Interviews, and today we have an exclusive guest. Do you want to introduce yourself?
My name's Reese, but most of my followers know me as Punky Reese. I'm from Hayward, California. That's where I started my creative journey with music. And I'm here today, and I'm so excited to be here. So thank you so much.
That's awesome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your music and what you do as a creative?
So from a young age, I've like always just really been interested in punk music, like anything alternative. And my mom listened to a lot of country, so I had a lot of country influence. And so I play acoustic guitar because I've always loved country music and folk music especially. And so I lost my train of thought. The camera made me lose my train of thought. I'm sorry. Okay, should I run back? You want to ask a question again? Okay. What was the question?
What do you do as a creative?
What do I do as a creator? I write songs, I produce beats, instrumentals, I'm a writer, I write poetry, I love to cook, like I'm just loving to create. I love to just give things to people.
That's really cool. It seems like you really do a lot. What's your favorite song that you've written?
My favorite song?
Yeah, that you've written.
That I've written? Oh, my favorite song that I've written. I would have to say High Hope de Coke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely the catchiest. I get the best reactions from that one.
What emotions or experiences inspired you to write that song?
High Hope Addicted to Coke was written about a girl I knew who was very young, and oh my god, I'm getting like, what the fuck? I'm like, hold on, stop. Hold on, let me run back. It's very emotional. It's a very emotional story, I'm sorry. But I knew this young girl who was abusing drugs, and so I seen a lot of, I related to her a lot, and even though I wasn't using drugs at the time, I definitely seen like a picture of where I could be, what I could do to myself. And so I wrote this song about her and kind of about myself. It's a really emotional song, but it has quite like a upbeat rhythm. Like you wouldn't guess that there's so much emotion behind this song because it comes off as just so like carefree and funny. But I think that's kind of just like the irony in it, like the song. And what it means to me.
Is it out on all platforms? Is it out right now?
Is it an album?
I say, is it out right now? Can we find it?
High Hope Addicted to Coke was never released on any platform. Mm-hmm. Not Spotify, not YouTube, nothing. It currently resides in my iPhone files.
Is it more of a private song?
Not intentionally. Mm-hmm. I think... So the song was written and composed by me. The lyrics were written by me. The whole idea of rhythm and the setting of the song and the composition is all mine.
So do you want to tell us how you wrote High Hope Addicted to Coke?
Sure. So the name, right off the bat, it's a play on like I think it's in like Snow White or something. They're like, High Hope, and that's the, so it's like that type of vibe, like shanty, right? And so I changed it to High Hope because being high is like hope to people that, you know, look to substance abuse for, you know, for coping purposes. Mm-hmm. And so it's High Hope Addicted to Coke. That's where the name came from, and I wrote this and wrote and composed this song. I had the idea for it just in my head, and I sat down one day and I was like talking to Nick, and I was like, I want to make this song, and I have this idea. And he's like, he wrote this bass line, and I think I like just took it and I like played it on my headphones over and over again. I grabbed my guitar and I was like, let me just write like some easy root notes on guitar. And so for people that don't know what that means, it's just like some easy chord shapes, you know, you just easy chord shapes, and then you strum. And so I was playing with different strum patterns, I ended up coming up with a C. And then I was like, okay, that's cool. Let's go into an E. Let's try an E. And was like, okay, I like that. Let's try an F. And then obviously end it with a G. Duh. And then I was like, that's cool. And so pretty much it became. And then we just wrote the lyrics over it. And so it's high hope. With a bullet in her head, just strapped to a bed, high off some fucking meds. Spent her life wasted, couldn't bear to even face it. Fall to rock to the bitter end. Just know it ain't a joke, and when you skip coke, you're sure to lose it all, my friend. And that was how it happened. And then we just jazzed it from there. Thank you. We just pretty much jazzed it up from there and made the recording. And that's the story of I Hope You Can Cook.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Thank you. I had a friend at the time who was a buzzing musician in the Bay Area, and he was a part of a band who also had a good following. And so during that friendship, we had created this song, but we ended up having a falling out and led to a downward spiral. So we never released the song. And like I said, it kind of just sits with me. Like, I've never contacted them again, really. And so I wouldn't want to like release it without their knowledge, mm-hmm. without their permission, without including them in the credits. So. I would rather just not associate with them, so it's an unreleased song.
What would you describe your style of music, like your genre of music that you mainly create?
Okay, we good.
What would you describe the genre of music that you create?
Punk, folk punk. Not a lot of people know what that is. It's a really tiny subgenre, just in the cracks of punk rock. But it's kind of, it has like an influence of country and just this like rugged aspect to it. Punk, but like, give it rusty.
Is there a specific life event or a moment that pushed you towards that genre?
I was always a rebel growing up. I grew up in like an abusive household, and so I was always the one like getting in between and like, you know, trying to deflect situations, I guess, and I would put it on myself. Mm-hmm. And so I was always kind of like a rebel and wanted to fight back. And so when I found out like about punk music, I was like, this is like everything I'm about. This is cool.
For sure. Who are some of your favorite punk artists?
Most people know him as Pat the Bunny. I believe his last name is like Sweenish. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but his name is Pat Sweenish. He writes a lot of music that is very political, very politically driven music. And so from a young age, listening to that and getting ideas from that and, you know, kind of his whole theory on society, it just gave me this like different perspective on life. And so I wanted like society to be better, and I wanted to be like a leader in society, mm-hmm. and I wanted to like make a mark, you know?
For sure. That's nice. What does punk mean to you personally?
To me, punk is about being honest, being true, and washing your own dishes, you know, doing your part, carrying your own weight, and taking care of the people around you.
How has your approach to creating music evolved over time?
So I have quite a few tracks that are like unreleased as well that I made with like a small rap group at the time named Scheme. And we had recorded several, like, I think three, maybe four tracks that were kind of like rap. And it was like different vibes of rap. Like, you know, like we would do like a rock type of beat. We would do like a trap type of beat. And so I experimented a lot with like rap at the time. And then I kind of just realized I wasn't like good at it. Like I wasn't good at like, rap is really based in like being hard and being like, you know, like down for your shit. And I didn't like all of the violence that was like associated with that music, because they would kind of like write about their own, do their own version of rap. And then I had my own version of rap and it was like not congruent. It was like very, what's the word? Like, it was like black and white. You know what I mean? It was so like
different.
Yeah. Contrasting. That's the word. It was so contrasting. And, I just felt like it wasn't the type of genre for me. And so I went on to try to do hardcore, because that was always my like dream, was to try to show more girls that they could do hardcore music. It's like a heavily male dominated scene. And so women aren't like particularly accepted at those types of events. And so I wanted to like make a space for girls like me, women like me, to be able to come into spaces like that and stand their ground.
For sure. How do you help women stand their ground in spaces where they aren't welcome like that?
So they're like, sexual assault was rampant in like the Bay Area punk scene at the time. Like girls were getting groped from behind and getting groped, like when people would get pushed into them, they would, you know, get their chest groped. And so, you know, I was always teaching girls, you know, stand up like this, like don't let people touch you.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And so, sorry, oh my God. And I just, you know, taught them, like, to be aware of their surroundings, to look and watch who they're around, and to stay around people that they trusted, you know, to make good decisions and to not be too under the influence at these events, you know? And so that was always my goal, you know, just to teach girls that that shit, they didn't have to stand for that shit, you know?
That's really powerful.
I had no idea I was gonna get so emotional. I had no idea. Just like I thought it was gonna, like, you know what I mean? I just guess there's a lot behind the music, you know?
So going to mental health, how has your mental health journey influence themes and emotions in your music?
I think it really reflects where my kind of personal stance was on things at the time. Like Mustard Yellow is a very angry song. It's a very like fuck you, I hate you song. Whereas like Kai Hope Addicted to Coke comes off as more like carefree and funny and like, you know, less like more lightweight song. I kind of drifted. What was the question again?
How has your mental health journey influenced your music?
And so, yeah, going through different phases in personal stances, I guess, with where I seen my perspective on life and things that had happened to me, over time it kind of shifted, and I started making music that was less angry and more, I guess, true to my character. And at the time, I was living in a trailer, and I was living in like a small town in SoCal called Banning, and it's like a train stop town, so there's lots of trains going by, and so I really incorporated that into the music, into the songs, like the trains, and I remember wanting to like hop on one and just like go somewhere, and I never did. But, you know, I really wanted to incorporate, like, that adventurous journey type of vibe into music.
I love that. What brought you to move to Sacramento?
What brought me to the Sacramento area? I used to live in Hayward, like I said, and I created music, and I had a huge social media fallout, and it caused me to receive an intense amount of backlash. Mm-hmm. Death threats and harassment and just bullying, I guess. Mm-hmm. I tried to like turn my back to it, but I got really bitter over it. And so, what was the question again? Sorry.
What brought you to Sacramento?
We'll just cancel all that, right? Let me answer it again from the beginning. What brought me to Sacramento? Let me answer it more simply. I had a huge social media fallout that led me to kind of have to flee the area because of the amount of public backlash I was getting. So I went somewhere that was more low-key. I was living in a trailer in like a really small town in SoCal. And I was able to get back into a housing program. That was the biggest thing, was why I had to leave, was because I lost my housing after things that had happened. And I had nowhere to go, so a friend offered me to stay and stay there for a while. And then I found a new housing program and I moved to Redding. And I stayed there for like about a year, and then I was able to move to a nicer apartment here in Sacramento. And so that's what brought me here. I kind of had like a back and forth journey, but I'm really grateful to be where I am right now.
That's really cool. So going back to mental health, do you find writing and composing to be a form of therapy to you?
Absolutely.
And if so, how does it help you process? How does it help you process difficult situations?
I feel bad that I interrupted you. Can we run it again?
How has your mental health journey helped you process difficult emotions? Oh my god. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. This is like, I mixed up two questions. Do you find writing and composing to be a form of therapy to you? And if so, how does it help you process difficult emotions?
Like I said, I think my music really reflects how I'm feeling at the time. And mm-hmm. so I definitely perceive it as like a coping mechanism, form of therapy. I put a lot of my trauma, a lot of my feelings into my music, so...
Question. How do you navigate the balance between being vulnerable in your music but also protecting your own mental health, you know, without feeling like you're maybe oversharing or,
you know? I don't know if I've really learned that yet. My music is just so explicit, I guess. I'll write what I'm feeling. I write poetry and I write what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, and I don't let people put me in like a category or a box of what I'm allowed to do. Like I'm allowed to do whatever I want, and so that's kind of how I reflect on that.
What role do you think artists play in helping normalize mental health conversations?
A huge role, and I think it's crucial to, I mean, not everyone agrees to be a role model, but in the end, we're all watching each other and we're all learning from each other, and most importantly, the youth is watching and learning from each other. And so when you make bad decisions, you might just think you're making bad decisions for yourself, but you're setting an example, whether you like to or not. You're setting an example to the youth and mm-hmm. normalizing things. And so it's, like I said, crucial that you promote positivity and that you make good choices, not just for yourself, but for the sake of the people watching you.
For sure. advice. How do you hope your music impacts listeners who might be going through similar situations?
Hear you.
How do you feel like your music impacts people who might be going through similar situations?
I would like to put my music on a larger scale because I think that people could relate to the subjects of my music or put their own perceptions of what it means into it. And so I like that, you know, I want people to feel things from my art, to think about things deeper, to maybe get a different perspective, and that's what I would say, yeah, like this. Sorry that I did so bad.
No, that's good. If you could tell your younger self one thing about mental health, what would it be?
Definitely want to emphasize again that people are watching you and people notice you. It's really easy to think when you're in a bad mental health space that nobody cares about you or that no one's watching you struggle. But people definitely notice, and so it's really important to keep yourself in a stable space, to learn about yourself and to give yourself the space to experience your emotions and to express them in whatever way you choose.
Does the pressure to constantly create or perform ever affect your mental state? Does the pressure to create or perform ever affect you mentally?
Definitely for a long time. I felt like I couldn't make music on my own because when I had... So Mustard Yellow was the first track I ever produced, ever. And it's a lot of people's favorites. It's some people's favorites. But it was like mostly composed by Nick. He had a lot of experience with instrumentalism and just coordinating instruments. And also he was pretty good at like the mixing and the editing and using the software. I never had experience with that. I never thought that I could get to that level that he was at. And so I kind of discredited myself as an artist for a while and thought like, I can't make things without other people. And so that kind of sent me into this like place of like, am I a real artist? And
like that, imposter syndrome.
Yeah, and it like motivated me to make something finally on my own so that I could prove to myself and to whoever was watching that I could make something on my own, that these ideas are my ideas and I don't need anyone else to help me express those ideas. And I really want people to feel like that, like, just because they're feeling something that isn't typically talked about or normalized, it still matters, and you can find people that will relate.
Do you feel like the punk music scene is a safe space to talk about mental health?
You know, in punk culture, drinking is really normalized. Like, alcoholism is almost typically normalized, and drug use. That kind of happened, you know, in the later 90s when, heroin and all that stuff and grunge, like, got involved with music, and it kind of deterred what punk was supposed to be, at least from my perspective. And, there seems to be like a lot of talk of like mental health and acceptance and things like that, but there is this strong social impact that cancel culture has on the youth. And so it's very easy to get berated for your actions these days, especially online. And so it's like they have this false false motivation, you know what I mean, to say we care about people that have mental health problems, but when someone experiences mental health problems, they demonize them, and there's no sense of they're canceled, and and there's no hearing their side.
So it's like, say, like, if you publicly display like a mental health issue, it's like it's demonized instead of like seeing it as like, oh, this person needs help.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people that, like me, I've been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, but they kind of took that down to bipolar disorder since I've been in a better state for the past year. But it was, I feel like a lot of people that struggle with this feel embarrassed after they display intense emotions or they have outbursts or, you know, just, it's because it's a, the disorder is aggressive, and it has aggressive symptoms. And so it kind of makes people that experience them feel crazy or like less than others or alone, isolated. Mm-hmm. And so definitely, like, I wish that I could say that the scene is, this whole, you know, music scene as a whole is making an impact on mental health, but it's not strong enough to deter this cancel culture theory.
For sure. That makes sense. How do you feel cancel culture has affected punk?
Like I said, I think a lot of people, they get buried deep. I could name a lot of people that I even, but I won't. Just people that I noticed in the scene that were at a great place and then they were just kicked off the top for numerous reasons, for allegations, accusations, and in the end it all was just bullshit or drama, you know. It really impacted me as a person, because I was canceled. And for a long time that impacted my ability to create with others, because I was canceled. Nobody wanted to associate with someone that's canceled. And so, like I said, they really bury you deep and there's no coming back, or that's how they make it for you. But I think you really have the ability as a person to take control of your narrative and show people who you truly are. I think it shows in your actions and in the way you speak, in the way you treat people, in the way you look at life. It all makes a difference. It all forms a perspective.
That's definitely true. These questions are pretty deep. How's your relationship with mental health changed over time?
How's my mental health?
How's your relationship with mental health changed over time? Like,
how has my relationship with mental health changed over time? I really used to abuse myself. Like, I didn't know how to cope. I thought coping skills were bullshit. Like, I'm like, when I'm mad, I want to break shit. Like, I don't want to go cope. Like, I want to break shit. That's how I cope. And so, you know, I had that outlook on mental health for a long time. Like, there's nothing I can do about my outburst. There's nothing I can do about how I am. Like, this is just how I am. And for a long time, like, I just accepted that I was, like, a unstable person. Like, when I was younger, I was placed in a high security level group home, and I signed a paper at once that deemed me gravely disabled, because I had neglected myself. I wanted to get out of bed, and like, I just like deteriorated as a person. I was very young, 13, 14. And so I signed a paper, and it made them really easy to, like, place me in a high-level place like that, so that I could get 24/7 care. And so through that, I experienced a lot of trauma, and it really impacted my decisions in early adulthood. I never had, like, a good role model. The staff in the group home that I was at, they tried their best, but they were really young. And so sometimes they wouldn't set good examples, but they tried their best. I recognize that as an adult now. But from that, looking back on it, I think that that's what's been able to cause me to grow so much and to be where I'm at today, where I make it my responsibility to care for myself in all the ways that I need to. I kind of realized, like, the past is fucked up. There's nothing I can do about that. And so I choose to just kind of move forward and not take it out on myself. Mm-hmm. Did that for a long time. And it's not too sustainable.
Yeah. That's really the only thing you can do, is move forward when you feel like you've maybe made a mistake, you know, just move forward and do better. You know?
Absolutely. I think accountability is a huge part as well, you know, mm-hmm. besides just, you know, admitting you made a mistake or just seeing that making a mistake and moving forward from it. I think accountability is a huge part. It's important to take accountability for your actions and to see your part in things. And for a long time, that was, like, hard for me. Like, I thought, like, I was in the right, you know? And I had the biggest thing I used to say is that I'm good at arguing. Like, I know how to argue. And someone told me once, they're like, when you're arguing, you're not hearing the other person. You're just trying to get your way. And I was like, what the hell does that mean? And I thought about it. You know, I sat and I thought about it, and I was like, how, like, you're arguing, how's that a bad thing? Like, you're supposed to, like, fight for what you want. And then I realized, like, you know, when as you're fighting for what you want, you're not listening to what the other person is trying to fight for what they want. And so you're not looking at it from an outside perspective, you're just seeing it from your own. You're not seeing both sides, you're just seeing your own. And so it's hard to step out of your own body and look at the situation. But the sooner that you learn to do that and to perceive it accurately, it reshapes the way you see all of your interactions and the way that the reason why your life is where it is. Like, when you realize your place and realize, like, wow, I've been in the places that I've been because of choices that I've made and decisions that I made, and I realized, like, I can take control of that. I can take control and make good decisions and long-term decisions. I learned mm-hmm. about what making long-term decisions meant, which was just never something I grew up seeing. Like, we would get, like, dogs, and they would, like, be gone a week later. So
you feel like, I feel like you've explained to me that your childhood and teen upbringing had a huge effect on, you know, actions as when you're an adult and such like that. But it seems like a lot of growth has taken place.
Absolutely. You know? And I credit a lot of that to I think what really matured me was getting into a long-term relationship and having three dogs with them. So it really kind of tied me down. And for the first time, I was like, it wasn't so easy to just get rid of them. You know, it was like this huge emotional tie to these people and these dogs. And so it kind of reshaped me. And it made me more motherly, I would say, more more mature and more like maternal.
You feel like you awoken to like more of like a empathetic side of you?
Absolutely. Like when I found someone that I really loved and I had some dogs that I really loved, like all I wanted was to protect those things. And so it reshaped the way I see people in society. And I realized that people are just people that need to be protected. You know, like the saying is like, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. It's like, it takes a village to raise a person. You know, it doesn't stop after childhood. It continues way on after that.
Yeah. Everyone needs support, you know?
Absolutely.
What are some future projects or future creative decisions that you're working on?
Sorry.
So what are some future projects or creative things that you're working on? And what are some future projects or things that you're working on?
Right now, I'm in school. I'm majoring in nutrition, so I don't have a ton of time to work on creative projects right now. And so I'm kind of waiting to get into a stable career so that I can put funds into my creative projects. I collaborated with a well-known rapper. His name's RXK Nephew. I sent him my song and he was like, he FaceTimed me and he had this like big old sun hat on. And I was like, did you like the song? And he was like, what the fuck did you think I called you for? And I just, when I heard that he liked my song, I mean, the guy that wrote American Terrorist, the guy, like, just, he's the maker of the Crack House, you know what I mean? Plymouth, like, he wrote so many amazing songs. And so for him to say, I like your song, it impacted me deeply. And so I was like, you know, I gotta do this, like, I gotta pursue this as a career. And so I figured, what's the smartest way to do that? But to get financially stable first, so that way I don't need to rely on anyone to get me the things that I want or to help me create the projects that I want.
For sure. If someone were to listen to your music for the first time, what message or feeling do you think they would walk away with?
Well, from the reaction I've gotten from people when I show them the song while they're like sitting next to me, they're like, or they're like, that's you? You know, I guess I come off like more soft-spoken, so it's hard to imagine me like screaming at that volume, but it is me. I think people listen to it and they're like a little bit taken aback, because like I said, you know, like, whoa, girls like making that music. I love that song from Call of Duty. Is it like 115 or something, 114? I'm bad at remembering like song names that are numbers. But it's by a lady named like Elena something, Elena Gilmer, I don't know. She has like crazy vocals and she's like, she's awesome. There's another lady named Otep, and she just has like the most just like hardcore fucking voice ever, and I really look up to them, and I want, when I listen to their music, I'm like blown away, and I'm like, I feel changed, I feel inspired, and that's what I want people to feel when they hear my music, like to feel inspired to like do what the fuck they want, to just like go crazy, go stupid, you know?
Before we end it off, there was like you've mentioned several times that there was an event that caused you to get canceled, you know? Do you feel like there's another side to this story, you know, that was not ever shared to the public?
Well, you know, this this whole canceling thing was just the, I guess, breaking point that everyone's seen, but there was a lot of buildup. Like, a lot of buildup. So many events, like, too much to sit here and tell everyone, you know? Yeah. It's just so fucking much that happened, and my outlook on it now is, you know, I was in numerous toxic relationships. I didn't really have, like, a good example of what, like, a healthy relationship looked like. So sometimes I would think I was getting into a healthy relationship, and then I would learn, like, this is not healthy. And so, you know, I think the biggest thing is that when you, I feel almost lucky to still have the story posted, because it shares a singular perspective. And when you really compare it to the full chain of events, it's just such a minuscule part, and it is cleverly crafted to make one person look like the victim and the other person to look like the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And so I was the aggressor in this story, and the other person was the victim. You know, there's a lot of inconsistencies in the story that this person typed out and posted about me. And, you know, the people that actually ran the account were questionable people themselves that had quite a few allegations against them, that had lots of public outbursts and similar things to what I was experiencing. They were like, let's just, like, hop on this and see, like, how much we can, like, stir up from using your name in this big ordeal, you know? Like, when one person accuses you of something on this, like, platform, it's such, like, a
ripple effect.
Yeah, it had, like to like, show all of these people and to tell all these people this story, like, it's... Okay, let me cancel that. Right, so let me run back. I think, like I said, you know, it's the story is really crafted to make one person look like the aggressor and one person to look like the victim, and there's no really outside perspective from that. And when you look at, like, the videos that this person has posted where they speak about it, they don't really mention the actual event of, like, assault. They don't mention, like, there's no, like, emotion behind it. It's more of, like, a aggressive, defensive type of video. I mean, he's like, let me pull up what he, like, let me just read it, right? So, because I think it's really funny, right? Because it's in a video, and when he says all this, it, I think it's funny when I read it, because it's in a different voice, right? So, like, she come outside talking about, you stole my phone. A little iPhone 7, a little iPhone 8. I got a fucking iPhone 11 Pro. You feel me? My uncle gave me good phone. You feel me? New phone. I don't need your shit. So we go up in her house and I help her look for a phone. And we find her phone and she tries to kick me out. Mind you, I was staying with her for a cool little minute. All my shit was in her house. I had clothes, shoes, camera equipment. So yeah, no. I was not trying to leave her house without my stuff. So can people please stop talking about they know my situations when y'all don't know shit about my situations? And so this perspective that, like, the people don't need to know the full story, but also, like, not acknowledging that I have the side of the story is pretty backhanded, because I think the full story is always important. Everyone needs to know the truth. So it's quite defensive, you know, and to kind of, like, rub in that he, like, has this, like, good phone, but then also saying that he's living with me and staying in my house is a little inconsistent. You know, if you have nice things and all these belongings, why are you staying with me? So, you know, that was a huge part. I think, you know, just the inconsistencies are very clear when you read the text, when you really read it, and, you know, like, just too many inconsistencies to really get into. And I just don't really care to entertain it at this point, because it's childish and it's obviously bogus. It's obviously bullshit, and I'm just done letting that narrative affect the way people perceive me. I mean, I haven't acted or treated people like that since then. I mean, I really learned my lesson, and I think it's pretty fair to say that. I mean, I was getting death threats, hate, you know, all of the above, and so, you know, I really had a lot of time to think about my own actions and to consider other people's perspectives. But, you know, I know the truth in the end, and they know the truth. And so, you know, I've tried to reach out and offer them help. And, you know, they're abusing drugs. Like, they're still in the same cycles. And I've tried to reach out and be like, hey, check yourself in somewhere. Check, like, get help, you know? And I've always promoted that, you know? But heavily, heavily now after what has happened. And so I think their perspective on it is just really telling of what truly happened, and what people know me as, you know, someone who taught people to protect themselves, people who took people in and let them safely sleep in my house. You know, there was never allegations of assault then. When I would let drunk people stay at my house, I wanted a safe place for people to be because I knew I was a safe person. And so I think that's what was like so, you know, exciting about the story, was because people were like, oh, this girl is normally like a good person. Oh, she's actually like a fucking horrible person, you know? It's just, it's a lot to experience all that. And, you know, I don't like to get into the full story because it just pertains a lot of like traumatic events, personal traumatic events that I just like wouldn't want to talk about on social media. Yeah, and so, you know, you know, but everyone, you know, has a reason, and these people post the reaction, but not the buildup. And I think, you know, that's another huge part. So, you know, when you see a video, you know, you might think that you understand everything and that you see what's going on, but there is so much behind it. And like I said, I almost feel lucky that that is still posted, because it's very telling. it's like a time capsule of what was going on at the time. And the saddest part, I think, is that on that page, there is a horrific telling of a traumatic event that occurred to a girl in the Bay Area, where she was ripped from a trail and assaulted violently. That story has 100 likes. The story about me doing just like bullshit things, you know, she beat my chest in so hard I couldn't, like, if you, like, why didn't you go to the hospital? You know, it's just so many, like, it's so dramatized. It's just, and it's so like one-sided. It's a lot to carry like on your shoulders, you know. It's like I move forward from it, but it still affects me, you know, to this day. Like, it just, like, when I got this interview, it was like, I don't know if we should do this, almost, you know, like, I don't know if people are gonna like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was like, I get it, you know, I get the position to interview someone that's so controversial, you know what I mean? And so I respect, you know, your neutralism in this situation. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to promote positivity and to hear both sides. And so I'm really lucky to have gotten this platform. And I'm so happy to have gotten a chance to talk about my music and my future endeavors and stuff like that. Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you, Tsunami.
Thank you, Punky Reese, for coming on the platform, sharing your story, talking about mental health. One of our first, you're probably our first punk artist we've had on here.
Awesome. You know what I mean? One for the girls.
Where can people find you?
Where can people find me? So my username currently is Unlikely Reese, UnlikelyReese. Reese like the candy, so don't forget it. yeah, that's me. I love posting nutrition like ideas, meals, ideas, you know what I mean? I'm all about a balanced diet and, you know, just getting exercise and socializing and just doing all the things you need to be a healthy person. So I'm always giving tips because I've really been in rock bottom. And so it's like, I got to keep myself up. So, you know, anybody who wants to watch that, anybody who wants to, you know, follow along on this journey, you know, applaud them.
For sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job, Jabari.
Good job, Jabari.